Hey guys, welcome to the Cloud Computing Weekly Podcast, your one-stop for news, information, and expert advice around the emerging world of cloud computing. This podcast is brought to you by Cloud Technology Partners in partnership with our host, TechTarget. This is episode 6868. My name is Dave Linthicum, Cloud Computing SME, author, speaker, B-List Geek, and with the firm Cloud Technology Partners. And joining me is my special guest, Eric Hahn. Eric, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you, David?
Where are you calling in from?
I'm calling in from the Bay Area, Redwood City, just south of San Francisco.
Right. I wish I could say it's snowing here. We had a white Christmas, but it was actually 68 degrees yesterday. I was out on my motorcycle.
Well, it was 30 down here, which is not typical.
I'm glad you got a bit of our weather for a change. Anyway, he's the director of product management and container storage at a container storage startup called Portworx out of the Bay Area. Prior, we met while Eric was at Google. Eric was at Google, where he was product manager for Kubernetes through its version one and the hosted version of Kubernetes called Google Container Engine. I messed that up a bit. Why don't you fill in the missing pieces? So what's Portworx all about, and what are you guys offering in the marketplace?
Absolutely. So Portworx is a container storage company, and we are here to bring and extend the benefits of containerization through storage. And I think we're definitely in a disruptive market, and we're here to extend that even more so.
Yeah, it seems like the container stuff, especially the stuff we're building, storage is stuff we typically have to cobble together. There's mechanisms to do it, but it just doesn't seem that straightforward, and it seems to be there's all kinds of ways to do it, and there should be one single way to do it. Is that what you guys are promoting in the marketplace?
Absolutely. I think, if I take storage and containers and just expand on your point here, storage and containers look at each other through what I would say is a very small viewfinder. Containers are asking storage, isn't everything ephemeral? And then storage is asking containers, aren't you just another application pattern? And I would say no to both these. We're definitely here building out something that is trying to take a broader view, if you will, of that question.
So why do we need new technology in the world of storage as related to containers? So what's missing now that that this product kind of fills in a problem that it solves?
Absolutely. I would say, if you take traditional software-defined storage and use, some basic analogies, everyone takes a southbound approach of, managing the physical media. And that's where storage companies are all very common. And we all have different techniques, and we add advantages. The part that's very different with containers and the one that we're out here to build an interface with is also the northbound piece. The northbound piece, I mean, interfacing with the schedulers. So, you mentioned Kubernetes. So if it's Kubernetes, Mesos, or Docker Swarm, all these actually create a different interface for the user. And customers really want to be managing at the application level, at the application container level. And if you can marry the two and have a storage layer that works well with container schedulers with the user, you really have a benefit of taking out a lot of the manual steps, reducing the number of machines and servers, and creating a much better experience for the administrator. And what we really think this will happen, or what will happen, is the CIO will have a much better conversation with their CTO about how they are adding to the top of the line equation.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think that this whole area is just redefining how we think about storage and data retention, data in flight, data at rest, security, governance. It really comes with, you're in for containers, you're in for lots of different changes that come about. And if you're trying to be as efficient as you can, ultimately, it's a lot of retooling, a lot of new technology you need to layer in there. And I attended the CoreOS conference a few weeks ago, and I got a big dose of that. As people were identifying their use cases, they were just telling us the traditional ways of doing things weren't working, and they were waiting for new technology to come out to, in essence, fill in the pieces, or they'd have to hone the thing themselves. So you guys are addressing that area of the marketplace, correct?
Oh, that's exactly right. And I would say, if we think about it from a longer-term perspective, thinking two steps out, this purpose-built platform will really change how the use cases can work. And let me just illustrate with one. We're out already on AWS running in a public cloud environment. We're deploying early in 2016 with several beta customers. And these beta customers all have simple common requirements. They have lots of storage being generated. They have multiple sites and lots of manual steps across those sites. And we can take these workflows and we can have the number of steps We can reduce the number of clusters. And it's really because containers are about compute and bringing data to the close working set. And if we can take an architecture that runs storage natively and close to the container and coordinate with these environments and schedulers, we can drastically reduce their operational burden.
I think it's amazing. I think one of the things that I'm running into is pretty much, my job all the time is building new cloud systems, leveraging containers as the platform and containers as the path to, port these traditional applications or net new applications into the cloud, just because they're architecturally so elegant and efficient and portable and, all the things that we've, kind of been trying to do over the years, but haven't been able to achieve. And containers are getting closer than I think we've ever seen it before. So anyway, you can check out Eric's product and his company at portworx.com. That's PORTWORX.com. And you can contact Eric directly at eric@portworx.com. So great. It's very interesting as far as this whole world and how it's evolving. And I think the whole container is exploding within clouds. The cloud exploded. We're kind of getting over ourselves in terms of what the value is for that. And now we're migrating lots of applications and building lots of applications in the cloud. And now we have the container-based architecture and the standards that are associated with it and the different kinds of products that are coming in the marketplace to assist us to make that much better, because the portability, the security, the governance, the storage systems, a lot of that stuff just had to be hand-honed, as we got into building these systems. And, now with products like Portworx, we're solving some of the problems that haven't been solved before. And this is something that I'm going to take out to my clients as I move forward in 2016. So this month we're thrilled to announce the first print edition of The Doppler, our flagship cloud computing news and practice publication. It's a 50 plus pages of exclusive cloud content, including articles with Avid CIO Jonathan Thomas and Rob Alexander, the CIO of Capital One. Visit cloudtp.com/Doppler. Enter your mailing information. We'll send you a copy free of charge, and that's going to be on snail mail. That's a paper copy, so that's a paradigm shift for most people. So, slow news cycle. Obviously, everybody's on Christmas break, but we did have some acquisitions come about, probably because we're heading up toward the end of the year. Three reasons why Oracle brought Stack Engine, according to InfoWorld. And this is a article out of InfoWorld that talks about basically a tiny startup that aids ops teams with Docker has been snapped up to become part of Oracle Public Cloud. So when the word broke last week of Oracle buying a tiny container-oriented startup named Stack Engine, much head-scratching ensued. What would a company of Oracle size, scale, and clout, one with a six-person startup that's barely a year old? And I found this fascinating as well, because we are seeing a lot of startups, I mean, your size and smaller, that are just getting taken out just before they even get the products in 1.1 version. So they're out there, they got customers, and suddenly they're just snapped up by some of the big startups some of the big companies out there like Oracle and IBM and CA and the normal suspects that are in essence trying to buy their way into the world of containers. So what's your take on this?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think, we run across lots of startups as well who come to us, and, it could be for, I don't know their specific case of whether, there was difficult fundraising or whether it was an acqui-hire, right? But there's definitely a few things going on, one of which is that I think, having the long-term vision that a startup needs to have is not necessarily something that, is easy. People tend to think about the technology first, understanding the roadmap and being able to bring it to customers' hands is always harder. So sometimes when you join a startup, you realize that it's a total team sport and you have to be in it for the long haul. So, I don't want to say that they didn't have a long-term vision, but it's always a question, especially at that size. And then the thing for Oracle, I think, is really that the container world and the open source world is very different. And there's a mentality that they benefit from bringing in the small, agile startup. And the way we have to work with software these days in enterprises, I spent a decade at Microsoft, and the approach is so different. The development cycles and the way that you can bring something to market. There is definitely a play for larger companies to bring that in and bring that DNA. So it could be for both reasons. I actually don't know, but I would say that from Oracle's perspective, it makes a lot of sense if you're going to go into containers, that you bring in somebody who's been thinking about it day in, day out, and has had to live and die by it. So I think that's a smart move.
Yeah, I think it's a good company, and I think they're going to get some value out of it. And according to the article, the three reasons that they bought them, number one was to give Oracle Public Cloud more of a container slant. And I guess it kind of does that. Stack Engine products are likely to become Oracle products, so they can basically put it in their portfolio and have their white belted sales guys out there selling the thing. Oracle's seeking container talent that can build new things. Well, I'm not sure they get a ton of that with like six guys in the company. But I think this is, you know, who knows why startups are sold, and there could have been an issue with, you know, I don't want to go off and get another round of funding and, you know, it's time to cash out, or some personal reason, you know, why the founders want to cash out. But I'm seeing a lot of this as a pattern. And so a lot of the startups that in essence haven't really gotten off the ground and gotten much traction and are known in the space, and they just get kind of snapped up. And it happens that in things we don't read about. I mean, a lot of buddies work for startups, and, you know, I talk to them 1 month, and I'm talking to them the next month. They're working for IBM, and they're working for Oracle, they're working for CA, they're working for any number of companies out there. And so, you know, as someone who's sold a lot of startups, I think that, you know, who knows why the reason, you know, that they're, you know, the reason that they did this, but I kind of think it stifles innovation. I think that they should be allowed to kind of live in a free world. And I think you're right. It is a team sport, and they have to be dedicated to being creative or innovative, or else they're going to perish. And just that motivation is always going to be there, you know, when you're barely making payroll and trying to get your sales done and trying to get your products out. And then when you're bought up by a big company, that's has a tendency to cease. In fact, most of these guys, after their lockups are over, after 1 year, you know, they go off and build another startup. So, which am I being too cynical about this?
No, and I think that's actually especially true with Oracle. I was actually having lunch with a friend who does integrations at that company, and I asked him flat out, do people get excited about coming into Oracle? And I think there's definitely a perspective, and I do think that, you know, it's probably not exactly as everyone fears, but there is this cycle of coming in and out, and some of it is serial entrepreneurs. You know, they want to play a game that's very different, and they want to be able to innovate. I think, you know, the hardest part is when the company gets bought, the technology gets brought in-house, they may have existing customers, maybe not in this six-person case, and it never sees the light of day. And those are the ones that I think, you know, I reflect back on what you said. It stifles, right? So you don't want to see things like that, but bringing in new ways of thinking and a much simpler approach, those are always good things. So I would say this one remains to be seen about how it plays out. And there is definitely, just talking to friends who have been through this, there is a definitely perception or change that goes from being at a small person startup where everything's within your grasp and hands and going to a very large billion-dollar company. It's a mind change.
So when I was at mid-sized publicly traded companies in the past and we bought startups, the strategy was just to keep them as an independent company. In other words, they're wholly owned subsidiary of the company, but I don't want them in dealing with the politics. I don't want them dealing with, you know, all of the overhead that comes along with being, in this case, just a 1,000-person company versus Oracle, which is many, many, many tens of hundreds of thousands of people. And therefore, they can kind of maintain the creativity and don't have to worry about resources and going off a round of funding and things like that. Do you think that as the big software guys, Oracle concluded, start buying these guys up, that may be a better option for them to really just kind of leave them out there as an independent company and run them separately and still sell their technology and still brand them as Oracle or, you know, a wholly owned subsidiary of Oracle, but leave them as an independent. But they never seem to do that. They seem to shut down their offices, drag them in the company, you know, give them kind of token positions, you know, make them sign non-disclosures and non-competes and, you know, lockups for a year. And these guys ultimately become not as happy as they should be. I'm not blaming Oracle for this, by the way. I'm just talking about in general and end up leaving. And the cloud space seems like, and certainly the container space, we're just in a revolution of innovation right now where the ideal thinker should be really kind of on the field playing. To your point, it's a team sport. And this seems to be just bringing things down.
Yeah.
Again, too cynical?
No, I think you're right. There was a great article about how NewYorkTimes.com got started and how it was treated separately, just like you described. And actually, I moved from Seattle to California because of integrating a startup into Microsoft. And I felt like those founders didn't stay. the technology did get absorbed in, but that was also a difficult balance. You want to be able to reap the rewards of buying something innovative. You want to incorporate it into your broader products, and maybe that gives a bigger lift and a better benefit to customers. But at the same time, you want them to mature and get full fruition. And I think the best thing that companies can do is here, and this is my two cents, is let the customers do the talking, in the sense of put the product out there, let the customers judge. And some of that does mean being independent, as you describe. But there are technologies that are better off integrated and being part of a full, broad portfolio. And it depends if it's a technology play or a product play. If it's just a technology, I think there it's a much bigger chance of being integrated into some existing product. But if it's an existing product with lots of traction, you know, let the customers vote with their feet.
Well, I think 2016 is going to be the year of the acquisition. I think some big companies are going to get bought and some little companies are going to get bought. And I think the larger guys with lots of money and stock value are going to go shopping in the marketplace. And it's just going to be one of those things. I mean, it's just the way of the world. You've been in Silicon Valley long enough, and I've been in the business a long time. You know, that's how people make money. They cash out. But I just really hate to see a loss of innovation and some really intelligent and energetic people, you know, that are just kind of taken out of play for a year or two. And it's, I don't know, we'll see. Maybe I'm being a little bit more of a curmudgeon and I'll go ahead and hope for the best, but that seems to be the pattern that's emerging. So the next topic is the year in security, identity theft and fraud. And this was a article I caught in CIO Magazine that was published in December 22nd, and I kind of agree with them, and they have a nice infographic there. Go check it out. And let's see, who says CIO staff, so who knows who wrote this thing. But, you know, we all like to talk about security, but sometimes words can't tell the whole story. That's especially true in the case of cyber threats. I identify threat and fraud is a numbers game. And as you'll see, users weren't the winners in 2015. We had a number of breaches, and they have a nice little infographic that talks about 70 million of anonymous hackers has released records of 70 million phone calls by inmates in U.S. prisons. And they're talking about disabled a Jeep by hacking it in software. Wired Magazine, you know, Chrysler recalled 1.4 million vehicles. Unlike traditional recall through the owners, you know, could download the patch into the USB drives, then upload into the cars. So we had $1.4 million, which is pretty scary since we kind of run on software now in the cars. I'm afraid especially with, you know, like the Tesla out there with autopilot, you know, someone's going to take control of that thing and run into a tree. Expanded charges linked three men to last year's JP Morgan hack, which impacted 83 million households, yada, yada, yada. I mean, you guys know what happened. We had the whole thing with Sony. We had the whole thing with, you know, Hilton recently. We had the whole thing with Home Depot and Target last year with their breach. And it just seems to be that we're getting, you know, it's a more dangerous world out there. But, you know, one of the things that I keep noting, you know, as I'm blogging is I never see a cloud anywhere near this stuff. And so everybody's afraid that, you know, they put their information in the cloud, that it's going to be hacked. And it seems to be the more vulnerable systems are the traditional systems inside the traditional data centers in these companies. Again, am I too skeptical?
You know, that's a good question. I also saw your article about Barbie and Barbie being an IoT. Speaking of your articles, and I was thinking about VTech, and they had a camera that basically uploaded photos, and they had an incident as well. You know, I don't know if it's I do think the big public clouds have the ability to monitor and take big practices and not economies of scale in terms of buying power, but just in terms of insights and knowledge, being able to apply that for security purposes. So I do think that there is something there in terms of how public clouds can be secure. And, you know, as a consumer, I myself am also thinking about which electronic devices do I really want wired and Wi-Fi'd. So I do think it's a balance, and I don't know that there's an easy answer. So I think cynicism is warranted.
Yeah, and I think that the reason is you know, we're building cloud systems out there, and it's not all cloud systems, but we're putting a lot of thought and planning and a lot of good enabling technology and making them secure. So they're, you know, not as vulnerable. And so the more proactive security mechanisms use identity-based security, you know, they're more governed. We can, you know, monitor you know, the ports coming into the cloud to spot, you know, activities that may indicate fraud and may indicate, you know, denial of service attacks and all these kinds of things. Where the traditional systems, they just kind of become complacent. So they have this, you know, the old user ID password, RACF stuff, and the vulnerabilities out there are well known and they're shared on the internet. The sharing culture out there is just exploding. And these people, typically in foreign countries, can reach in and attack these things and grab the data because they're all connected to the internet. Well, the cloud systems are a little bit more contemporary, and they it's just better security that's built in these things. As I'm building, you know, I built traditional systems, I built cloud systems. You just think, you know, twice as hard about security as it's related into information that you stick in the cloud. You think about, you know, dealing with security of data at rest and data in flight, and you know, doing lots of things to protect yourselves. You know, triple and double locking these various systems, leveraging identity. But the biggest thing is that when people move into the cloud, there's proactive security mechanisms in place, monitoring, management, things like that. So we can kind of spot, you know, chicanery as it happens and go off and play whack-a-mole and get it out there. So the hackers kind of go after the more traditional stuff. And I think that's going to continue in 2016, 2017. And we're going to see, I'm sure we're going to see some cloud breaches out there because there's, you know, dummies out there not doing the right thing in terms of security as they move things into the cloud. But we're also going to see more traditional systems being hacked and more, quite frankly, you know, more sensitive and more valuable data that's getting absconded, you know, from some of these large corporations. And the corporations don't seem to be stepping up to the plate and making their security better. So the hackers are getting much, much better. The security within traditional systems, not as much. And I think we're going to see some large breaches. And I'm concerned. Are you concerned?
No, I am. You were mentioning earlier about what's going to happen in 2016. I think this is an area ripe for innovation. You know, there's definitely ones taking a social approach in terms of how they reward and incentivize the system for security. I think, you know, consumers, and I realize this article infographic is more than just consumers, but things like two-factor authentication will benefit. Having, you know, my phone as a form of authentication or verification. So those things will help. But I do think that this is also an area where startups will start to innovate more, especially when I talk about services and service accounts. I think, you know, the identity access management patterns of Active Directory and what people used to do may not fit. And I think there's going to be new things coming out, maybe 2016, maybe 2017.
So will Barbie kill me in my sleep?
I don't think Barbie will kill you in your sleep in the sense that you can always put her in a box somewhere.
All right, we're connecting everything up to Wi-Fi. Our hubs are going to run out of space pretty soon. All right, please pick up a copy of my book, Cloud Computing and SOA Convergence, which you can find on Softback on Amazon as well as on the Kindle. Also, don't forget about Mike Kavis's book, Architecting the Cloud, and Jonathan Baer's book on Kubernetes, Speak of the Devil. And also read my blog on InfoWorld. And don't forget to go to www.cloudtp.com for current news and links to this podcast and more ways to contact us directly. Twitter, I'm at David Linthicum, DavidLinthicum. You have a Twitter account, Eric?
I do. It's Eric7Han.
Awesome. Where can we find? And also mention your company again. Where can they find you guys on the web?
Absolutely. So Portworks, you can absolutely just Google search for us, and our Twitter handle is PORTWX.
So if you're doing containers, that should be on your shopping list because there's a very few solutions out there that do that. And believe me, I built one of those myself, and I do not want to do it again. Also, please make sure to support our host, TechTarget. Make sure to read my content there as well as some great research, reporting, and events. Please go to searchcloudcomputing.techtarget.com. So until next time, best of luck in building your cloud computing solutions. We'll be back next week. You guys take good care and stay warm.